The conference committee will come to order. It's Saturday, May 21st at 4:30 p.m. We have a quorum present and returning. I'd ask that the amendment we just discussed, that Representative Seifert, be given to Senator Higgins to look over. For those of you who wanted to watch the Preakness at 5 o'clock, I'm told one person already left, so they can do that. Don't tell Senator Larson it's starting at 5, because I want to keep him here. We are not going to do any financials tonight. So if you are here for financials, we aren't doing any. We are going to do three things tonight. We are going to hear from Commissioner Ingeson when she comes. We're going to have some discussion with her about salary supplement and inflation factors. We're going to adopt language that's currently in the bill. And then we're going to deal with a list of amendments that have been developed through the work of this conference committee. We had hoped, Representative Seifert and I really believe that had we been left to our own devices, we would have finished this bill by Wednesday or Thursday. We are both very disappointed that we aren't there, but we aren't there for some pretty good reasons from the Senate's point of view, and that is conditions have changed in the last 24 hours. The Senate is not satisfied that we have addressed the salary supplement question adequately. The Senate is not satisfied that we've addressed the inflation factor adequately. And so the Senate's leadership has asked us to keep this bill open and to keep those discussions going so that we can look at the what the Senate position is very much that we need to have a budgeted for compensation and salary increases. And we are very concerned that thus far, officially this committee does not have a target. And the Senate's view is that this target needs to, for this committee needs to include those, some provisions for salary supplement. In addition, we are recognizing that the House and the administration, the Senate has had a position in favor of including inflation factors in the budget forecast, not the budget projection, the budget forecast of not the budget itself. And we have not been able to persuade our colleagues from the House of the merits of this. They're not keeping the bill open for that factor, but we would like to spend some time this evening with Commissioner Ingeson talking to her and understanding on the record how for our next budget forecast inflation will be incorporated into the forecast process. We have adopted some language in the data practices bill yesterday that was under consideration for this bill. Just to tell the conferees, the Department of Finance had requested, after our bills had closed, had requested some authority to get sales tax returns from revenue to help them with their forecasts. And there was an opportunity yesterday on the Senate floor to include their request in the data practices bill because it is a data practices issue. So we did do that yesterday on the Senate floor. So hopefully that will help the Department of Finance with their forecasting process. So that's the agenda for today, ladies and gentlemen. We hope to be out of here in an hour and a half if we work expeditiously. We had planned to start with Commissioner Ingeson, but the commissioner is not here yet. We'll be arriving shortly. So we're going to start first with adopting language that is in both bills. And so you may want to get out the side-by-side. Which I don't have. I lost my he just looks at me. The first provision is on R25. It's the Senate Section 2, and it deals with state auditors' reports to the legislature, and it's pretty non-controversial. It just restates. It's totally non-controversial, actually. We just skipped over it in previous times. Remember, it just requires them to use more electronic means and to conform with the state law in issuing published reports to the legislature and others.
I'll move this language.
Any questions? Senator Larson moves the language on R25, Senate Section 2. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next section is on R40, House section of 25. We agree with the House that it would be helpful for the forecasting purposes to have this information on expenditure increases, and so we would be ready to accept a motion to accept the House language.
Madam Chair, I'll move section 25, House side, page 40.
Representative Seifert moves R40, House section 25. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion prevails. Then members move to R48. Now this is a provision. I see that the Commissioner of Administration is here, and this is a section that we inadvertently skipped over earlier. It wasn't there were any problems with it, but this was a provision. I think Senator Higgins, was it your bill originally that deals with increasing the value of projects so that we don't have to go to bid for very small projects. And I don't believe this is controversial, and I believe, Senator Higgins, that you had the full support of the administration in doing this. The commissioners and Mr. Rose are shaking their heads yes. It was a department initiative, and members of the House, we simply skipped over this in our earlier proceedings. I wonder if members of the House need to hear from the commissioner about that or if we would be prepared to act.
No, I don't think we need to hear, but does it include both section 14 and 15?
It includes section 14, 15, and 16.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll move the Senate position on section 14, 15, 16 on page R48 and 49.
Representative Seifert moves section 14, 15, and 16 on R48 and 49. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion prevails. The next section is on R56 and 57. It's a Senate position, section 27. And this deals with the Amateur Sports Commission. And this was worked on fairly extensively in the Senate. It simply gives authorization for use of up to $300,000 of the lease revenue that the Amateur Sports Commission anticipates from that property that we heard described at the last Tuesday when they were before us. And we think this is the prudent way to proceed, and Senator Larson moves the Senate position. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next section is House Section 51. It deals with state land sales. The Senate is prepared to take the House position.
Madam Chair?
It's on R57 and 58, House 51.
Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins.
I haven't heard anything about this. Maybe I was out to lunch one day or something. Is this mostly DNR land, or what?
Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, we have had in the House bill the last two or three cycles surplus property sale, the BCA building, the health building. The commissioner testified that there is some land in Anoka County that is already docked up, I believe, and the agencies it's mainly identifying surplus property. It's not going out and auctioning off wetlands. We've kind of sifted through this. I think Representative Solberg and I worked on this together, and it was to have them come forward and responsibly tell us basically what is the maximum number you can handle without being irresponsible. And if the Commissioner of Administration would want to come down and testify that this is the number that we agreed to on the House side without becoming irresponsible on the surplus property and land sales, it is considered one-time money because we don't want to say we're going to get rid of land each cycle. It's to responsibly analyze it each biennium, so it would be considered a session law item. And I don't know if the commissioner, we did have a list, and I can run up to my office and get it, of the properties that were sold last time, and we are actually ahead, I believe, of where we were, of what we budgeted for this session. But the commissioner, do you know those numbers, commissioner? Okay. Maybe I can turn over to the commissioner, Senator Higgins.
Madam President. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Dana Badger, Department of Administration. We were given a legislative goal last biennium of 5.505 million. And we overachieved in that with the sale of the BCA building, for example, on University Avenue and a portion of the Anoka Treatment Center, we actually achieved just over $8 million in sales. Well, that's both good news and bad news. It means that some of the prime properties that might have been available for sale this next biennium have already been sold. We do, however, as Mr. Representative Seifert indicated, we do still have the remainder of the Anoka property, which is appraised at just over $3 million. And we do have interested buyers for that property. So that certainly can go toward this amount. I will say, however, that we have not specifically identified the remaining properties that would make up the $6.4 million. And it would have to come necessarily from properties that are in the custodial control of DHS. And there are, as you know, things going on at the treatment centers in Agua Chang Wilmer and St. Peter. It would also have to come from DNR Amendak.
Senator Higgins. And Madam Chair, I thought we were hurting for space, and I don't understand why we're selling off part of the Anoka Hospital campus.
Commissioner? Madam Chair, I'm not that familiar with the history. I understand, of course, the whole philosophy of utilizing treatment centers by DHS has changed, and they're more into residential treatment these days. And so these centralized settings are being declared surplus, as was the Anoka Treatment Center. As the land sales specialist in state government, we were given the challenge to sell that property.
Madam Chair, is the Anoka Regional Treatment Center the same as the Anoka Hospital? They're right by the high school. And, Madam Chair, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in this session in Health and Human Services talking about how we have a shortage of mental health beds, especially for children. And would that not be a good reuse of that space?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I believe that the interested buyer is Anoka County, which I think is looking at some utilization.
Okay.
And that's what when we sifted through this, we kind of went through some of these things. But I know you haven't had this before, and I do have the pile of state property that we have up on my desk. If you'd like, I've actually gone through each piece, if you can believe it or not, and all the parcels, and it's I don't know, what is it, something like is it 6 million acres or how many, what was it, plus all the buildings and the extra strips and parcels. There's no doubt in my mind that we're almost halfway there with just the parcels we've identified that are no-brainers. And each biennium that we've done this number, the administration or the commissioner has exceeded what the legislature has asked for. And we felt that it was a conservative number.
Senator Higgins, one just to add to that, the way I understand it is that because of the changes we're making in how we operate services for persons with mental illness, we are moving to more community-based care. As we move to community-based care, then having the facilities is one of the issues, and I think that's how it works at Anoka. Much like Olmsted County ended up doing, Anoka will purchase part of the state hospital, and they will operate, even though it's on the same campus, they'll operate more of a community-based program rather than a hospital-based program.
So my last question then, Madam Chair, is the language here says that the commissioner doesn't have to, well, it says it must offer land for public sale, but it doesn't sort of have to give notice to the public as far as, unless that's not really what you meant that sentence to say.
And Commissioner, help me with this, but there is a process that we go through by state statute when the state declares land surplus. And the first thing that happens is it has to be offered to other state agencies. And then it has to be offered, I believe, to the university and to the MNSCU system. And then it can be offered to local units of government. And if all three of those levels say no, that they're not interested in that property, then there's a process whereby it is advertised and made available to the general public. I guess I should have just turned to you, Commissioner. Is that roughly the
yes,
right
Madam Chair? The only step you left out is that there is an appraisal done of the property, and we are obliged to sell it for no less than the appraised value, which we have done in each of the cases in this biennium.
Thank you for explaining that.
There happened to have been two parcels that were sold last year through this process in my district, so I got a little familiar with the process. So, members, we have before us, we'll entertain a motion on...
Member, I'll move adoption of House Section 51 and page R57.
Senator Seifert moves adoption of House Section 51 and R57 and 58. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next section is on R62. It is a House repealer, which would no longer require the Department of Finance to approve all agency applications for grant funds, for non-state funds. Up until now, any agency, state agency that would apply for federal funds or foundation funds would have to have their application reviewed. And I believe that this was a department request not to require them to review all applications for non-state funds. Is that correct?
Mr. Shepherd, Madam Chair, has the little section on it, and it is becoming rather burdensome for these little, you have a little tiny grant for a thing, and they have to go through kind of a bureaucratic process. And so it's almost kind of an efficiency thing, which is what we're about.
Mr. Manager.
Representative Silver.
On the repeals on 61, there's a couple of them. I know one of them is a target center. We have to make sure we repeal the right ones.
We have the right set. The reference, I believe, that we need for this one, number Representative Solberg, is 16A.30.
We want to keep that open in case we have to do the salary supplement, Representative Solberg, so I'm not going to repeal the target center until Monday. Okay?
So this is just 16A.30?
That's correct, Representative Solberg. I should have stated it that way.
Thank you.
So Representative Seifert moves the repeal of 16A.30. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Last section of open language that we can deal with today is how on page R62 and 65, House Section 2. But we would like to invite the Commissioner of Employee Relations to come to the table on this because we also have an amendment that comes from a Senate provision. We just want everyone to understand that we are only taking the things that the Department of Employee Relations has supported. Welcome back, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Chair, I'm Cal Ludman, Commissioner of Employee Relations. With me is Deputy Commissioner Paul Lars.
Commissioner, we have House Section 2 on R62 and 65, and we have an amendment that's being distributed. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to see it earlier. It's our intention that we be taking the language that we understand you support out of the Senate Pension Commission bill. Perhaps Senator Larson's familiar with it, but the portions that we are proposing be adopted are, to our understanding, are the portions that are more around voluntary leaves. So perhaps you and Mr. Larson need a moment to look at that. We just want to make sure we are working in sync.
Madam Chair, I think I can speak to this. We have reviewed this. We had similar language in what we call a post-retirement option, had a voluntary hourly reduction, not necessarily about, it's not salaries. Leave, salary supplement leave. It's about voluntary reduction. We think the language is different, but we think the application is virtually identical to what we've talked about. It was agency discretion, employee discretion to accommodate an employee that wanted to work fewer hours. We consider this to be satisfactory language.
Members, have any questions on the 843 amendment? Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, is this just for this biennium so we can review this again?
Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, that was one difference. This one is limited in time.
Thank you.
To be honest with you, our language was not.
Representative Seifert moves the 843 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Seifert moves House Section 2 on R62 through 65. All those in favor of that provision signify by saying aye.
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 Motion prevails. Oh, excuse me. We have a one-word technical amendment, I'm advised.
Madam Chair, members, on R62, and I think I discussed this with Mr. Shepherd on the House side, page 51, line 18, we should make it state employee, the very first word there is employee, and just insert state before employee.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Members have heard the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Commissioner, could we invite you to stay for just a minute? We have now gone through what was pretty much the language in our bill, and we wanted to spend some time with Commissioner Ingeson, if you wouldn't mind coming up as well. We have two areas of discussion we'd like to have today with Commissioner Ingeson, and as long as you're here, Commissioner Ludeman, we'd invite you to join in the conversation. The first thing we really want to talk about is the salary supplement issue. This is the biggest issue for the Senate and not closing off on this bill, and we would just like to not put you on the spot exactly, but we'd like to have a sense of the Senate had proposed, let's start there. The Senate had proposed a 1% salary supplement that applied to executive branch employees. And it's very expensive, given our targets. Can you give us a sense, commissioners, of my own view? I just would invite you to speak, I guess, but my own view is that the prudent thing for us to do would be to start to plan ahead without making commitments in recognition that we will have total compensation cost increases in the coming year. So can you give us a sense of if we were to proceed with a salary supplement of some sort, what would be the prudent way from your point of view to proceed?
Are you talking to me, Madam Chair?
Well, you have the problem that it costs a lot of money, so you've got the finance commissioner with you. She can give you the financial planning side, and commissioner, you have to negotiate on behalf of the states with all of the employee groups, and I'm sure it would be a little easier. I'm assuming it would be a little easier for you if you had some assurance you weren't going to have to come back in and ask for a large supplemental budget next year. So, having been in our shoes, Commissioner, what do you think is the prudent way for us to proceed?
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, it's as the Commissioner responsible for negotiating the contracts, both salary and insurance. I need to remind you that, and I'll talk about that briefly, for the 31,000 members of the executive branch and the insurance benefits portion of the MNSCU, about 18,000 members of the MNSCU employees. It becomes a little difficult for us to talk about it so freely to say that we can, we have to respect the collective bargaining table, which we're in the middle of negotiations now. Obviously, more money always makes a settlement easier, but in its relationship with items such as across-the-board increases or step increases and or, which must include, for the most part, health insurance benefits. Some that may cause state employees to pay more, some less. It's difficult to know how we can get to a settlement, but we think we can. We always believe that we can. I think exclusive representatives of the state employees believe we can also. So we have to believe that, or we wouldn't keep talking, and we are talking. So, I think one of the problems with the salary supplement is it, would it be viewed as a down payment or a cap? I don't want to negotiate in front of the world right now, to be honest with you. So if this would be viewed as a satisfactory settlement by a legislature, I don't think anybody's saying that. But is it viewed as a... How is it viewed? It's viewed as $21 million more dollars. I know that. Its relationship in what else is going on in the budget is the hard choices of a legislature. If paying for this... being offered is being paid for by some other part that's not perhaps not even part of this conference committee report. Is a difficulty that Commissioner Anguson or the governor or the whole legislature would have to deal with. For example, if I may mention, there's been other items that talk about reductions of unclassified employees, removing deputy and assistant commissioners, taking away the will of this governor, and I apparently every subsequent governor, and being able to implement policy, which is an important budget decision, certainly a policy decision. That's the kind of thing we would look at when we look at a salary supplement as an appropriation by this legislature.
And Commissioner, I think you've stated very fairly some of the conversations that I've had over the last few weeks about this. Is it a floor? Is it a ceiling? If we go forward, then are we limiting choices? If we go forward, are we? I mean, because some have said, well, you know, if that's what you want, then that is the cap. So I think this is a difficult set of choices, but I think the really key thing is that we be really fair to our employees and that we recognize that for prudent budgeting, we need to do this. Let me ask two other questions. What percentage of our employees get no increase? Because if I recall correctly, about 60% of our employees are still eligible for annual increases because of progression in their years of seniority and they haven't reached the end of their ladder. But there's a certain percentage of our employees that have reached the end of the salary scale for their positions. So could you give us a general global sense of what percentage are in which?
Madam Chair, your numbers aren't bad. I think it depends on the bargaining unit. We have some units with long-term employees with a lot of experience where we have less than 20% of those employees eligible for step increases. Some of them where 60% are eligible for them. So it does vary. I think one of our biggest units is near 50%, if I'm not mistaken. Eligible for step increases. So if step increases roll over into the next contract year, they're eligible for that. Only half of those employees are eligible for any increase at all, short of a across-the-board increase.
In the proposal that the Senate made, we were really only covering executive branch personnel. So I actually do not know. Generally, when we settle with our units, we try to have them fairly parallel. And I can't recall, frankly, how the negotiations go on for the courts, not just the judges, but all the court personnel. And the salary supplement the Senate proposed did not cover the court personnel. So could you remind us of what impact that would have with the Senate salary supplement proposal on that side of the third branch of government?
Well, Madam Chairman, we don't negotiate for the judiciary, so... The same rules apply to them. I mean, if there's a salary supplement applied to that, it would have the same effect on that negotiations as it would a salary supplement on ours. So we don't negotiate that from here. What influence the legislature wants to have on that negotiations is part of this debate.
Well, I guess I think it's fair to say that we would be expected to match that on the court side, and I would also note for all the legislative employees in the room that our salary supplement didn't cover them either. So we were covering a portion of the state public employees, but not all of the state public employees, but even then it was $21 million.
Madam Chair, I need to also add, if I may, that the effect of us agency or agency cuts, reductions in state government funding itself has as much effect on what happens at a negotiating table, and certainly in the impact of an agency. If the agency was to receive a significant agency reductions, that means state employees generally would be, some of them would be losing their job.
And the Senate position has been to do across-the-board agency cuts. That has been our position. So that I just think it's important to have people understand the interplay of these various proposals. It's very difficult, and I remember saying that when we did our division, Representative Seifert, the Senate, I think it's easy for us sometimes to think that we don't honor, respect, and value the work that our public employees do. These budget choices are extremely difficult. Representative Seifert, I think I heard you say that you had a question.
Yeah.
I don't need to monopolize the conversation.
No, that's okay, Madam Chair. Commissioner Ludeman, what happened for, I believe the last time we did a supplement was in 87 or 88. What happened from 1987-88 to the present? We haven't had any supplements. It's apparently a priority this year for a lot of people. But what happened? There were increases in pay. Was it just the fact that the agencies came out a little better in the budgetary process than what they're doing right now?
Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, well, I think even Commissioner Ingalls can speak to that. But yes, it's incorporated into the budget process no matter what you do. So if agencies are going to receive increases, which during some periods of the 1990s was happening, the mission of government was and the responsibilities of agencies were growing, budgets grew accordingly. And out of those increased budgets were settlements were found, and so increases were allowed to happen, which was a good and positive thing. The economy, the ability of the state government to recruit and retain good quality state employees, which we still have, was as important then as it is now. And so that's where the increases basically came out of, was the agency budgets. Budget instructions are received for us to plan for these increases on total compensation, just as they are now. But for that purpose, the necessity of a salary supplement became less important, or at least perceived less important, and less, to be honest with you, then less influential on the collective bargaining process.
Okay. And Commissioner, if we were to come up with some money, you're not necessarily opposed to one if the legislature has one, but it hasn't been practiced recently. I mean, if we come back on Monday and we have to have some money, you know, we've got three votes over here to take the $31 million from the Minneapolis teacher pension subsidy and put it to a state salary supplement. So, I mean, we will have the votes if we need to do one internally in this bill. It's obviously got to come from somewhere else. So, you know, we certainly can find money from somewhere. It's just a matter of making it work and make sure it's ongoing, I think, because there's a tail problem if you don't. Going into special session, I think this is something that may need some conversation because the money came on the table potentially. But I guess what I would say is with what we have to work with, if anyone thinks that this committee is going to come out really well if we go into special session as opposed to human services in K-12, I have some Oceanside property in Lyon County to sell you. Nobody is going to say, let's take money off the table from human services in K-12 and give it to the state government finance division. And I mean that in all due respect, but I'm speaking from political reality. Bud Nornes, who has the higher ed division, was breathing a sigh of relief that they were able to get done before they got pillaged to pay for K-12 and human services. Because that, once we move into Tuesday, Madam Chair, with all due respect, I have a feeling that we're going to get to the point where we're kind of maxed out here on how much money we're going to have in our division. And I'm just being brutally honest. I'm very nervous about going into special session with this bill falling on its face because we're ready to get done. I think everybody around the table here is probably the most reasonable people in the legislature. Sorry, Senator Metzen. But
is that a compliment?
if we think that we're going to get, you know, dozens of millions of dollars dumped in our division out of K-12 and human services, I'm a political realist, and the way this sets up, ag, environment, state gov finance, run for your life, because K-12 and human services are on their way. So that's my statement.
You know, Representative Seifert, I appreciate that we've tried to deal with each other honestly, so I just have to ask you, how do you spell Lyon County?
L-Y-O-N.
Okay. we haven't tweaked each other in any way. Commissioner Ludeman, I do have another question for you, and that is that this budget division also contains the confirmation of contracts for a number of the bargaining units. And it's my understanding that if we don't pass this budget division bill on Tuesday, all of those contracts revert back to what was previously agreed to in a previous contract. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chairman. It is about, I think it's four or five of our units. If I think about it, I can think of them: engineers, nurses, IFO faculty, law enforcement, a couple others. We passed most of the ratification of most state employees last year, but it is important. We strongly support ratification of those contracts, as do, I'm sure, the exclusive representatives of those employees.
I think Representative Colbert was first, and then Senator Higgins.
Two things. There's always another way to solve a problem. I'll give you a couple of. I know that when the legislature a couple of years ago did not ratify the contracts in time, within a couple of hours they were re-signed, and they continued on for the next 30 days until the subcommittee on employee relations kicks in again. So that is another way of dealing with that particular issue. The second thing is, I think the Senate also had some funding sources to do away with, as I'm going to choose my words carefully, perceived extra or people in the top administrations of the different divisions. And there was a provision, I think that was in the Senate provision, that was picked up by a suggestion at one time of former Governor Carlson to rearrange the administration and make it more streamlined. As Representative Cypher says, there's Minneapolis funds that flow there, but there's also funds that flow to the administration of all the agencies as well. And I don't know if this is necessarily a question, but it's a comment that those funds could also be redirected to some other ways. So there's other funds that could be from, I mean, I know Representative Seifert is always after the schools and others to cut down administration expenses as well. And so that would be another possibility to look at solving this problem. Maybe I should ask for the commissioner's reaction to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I can tell you that there's fewer unclassified employees today than there has been in the last 25 years. Fewer deputy and assistant commissioners than there has been in recent history. And yet any governor, and I've known 11 of them, every governor would certainly want to make sure that they had at least enough appointive power to be able to implement the policies of an administration, whether it be Rudy Perfitch or Arne Carlson or Tim Pawlenty. As it's perceived, and I don't want to overplay this either, Representative Solberg, as it's perceived on how to pay for whatever these choices are, if it were be to back to the salary supplement, I guess my point is I wouldn't want to overestimate the effect of that on a successful voluntary settlement. Would be a dangerous thing, I think, for the legislature to overestimate its effect on what can be successful.
Senator Higgins.
Representative Solberg answered my question.
Representative Solberg.
That's okay.
Follow up? Okay. Then there really is a transition between the two commissioners, because once if we don't do a salary supplement, as we move into contract negotiations, we'll be back next year, I would think, of Commissioner Ingeson saying we need a supplemental budget to deal with our increased compensation costs. So can you help us understand and project what we might look forward to next year in this division to deal with the consequences of the contract negotiations? And that once Commissioner Ludeman settles those contracts, I don't think he's going to be able to settle at the existing level. So, and healthcare costs are going to go up. So what happens next, Commissioner? What will we look forward to for this division?
Madam Chair, I guess I just want to point out to you that as part of the governor's budget development, there were extensive conversations about this very issue as we were sorting through priorities and looking at funding situation. And what we did as part of the budget instructions, as has been done in many years past, is ask agencies to make the assumption that there will be salary increases and that they should plan their budgets accordingly. And so the numbers that we used as part of this budget development and the instructions to...
We're dealing with a base number that we start off with, as I understand it, and you may be managing it, but I don't think you have in the agencies, since we start with the base instead of the forecasted base, you are not necessarily have the flexibility to have that increase of 4% and 4% without having, as even if a status quo goes on, without having some kind of a layoff of employees or loss of jobs, or an assistant to the deputy commissioner maybe would go without managing it, without having at least some adjustment in the funding somewhere along the line. And so the salary supplement itself could be interpreted in some respects as somewhat of an adjustment of an inflationary thing that at least Dr. Anton, at one of the, on the Council of Economic Advisors, said at least we got to start addressing sometime and not put our head in the sand and say that inflation doesn't exist. So I guess that's probably a statement as well that indeed, you may be planning for it, but there's no money to plan for it at all.
Well, I did want to spend a little time with Commissioner Ingerson talking about the inflation and the forecast, and I don't know if that we need to make Commissioner Ludeman spend more of his Saturday evening in the, at that witness table, but you're welcome to stay, Commissioner, if you like. Commissioner Ingerson, could you, moral support, could you please review for us how inflation was treated before 2002? Because it's my recollection that it was a political decision made not to include inflation in the forecast in 2002 because it was helpful to us. And looking at our tails and looking at our budget forecast, not to have inflation factored in an election year. But now we live by the consequence of that decision, and some of us think that that wasn't the right decision. So what did we do before 2002? How did we do that?
Madam Chair, the Department of Finance has the responsibility to prepare the forecast, and we had twice a year we prepare a forecast, and where the inflation discussion really becomes an issue is when we talk about what we call planning estimates. We do a forecast for a current budget period and for a period outside of the, you know, the current budget period. We call them planning estimates, and we make assumptions that we had made previously assumptions that inflation on expenditures is included in that forecast. And what we really look at is that measure going forward in the following biennium of the difference between the revenues and spending, and have a discussion about that being whether the budget isn't structurally balanced for the long term or for the upcoming period. And in fact, I think the there was language in the statute that required us to include the impact of inflation on expenditures, and then that provision was removed in 2002.
So what do you do now? Because there's some programs that, you know, for instance, at least with my limited understanding, that on the Health and Human Services side, we forecast an increase in program enrollment. We forecast, and because of the way we let our contracts for healthcare services, there's an inflation factor already in there. So are there programs that are still like that, that are still increased for inflation and enrollments? And I don't know what percentage of the budget that represents and what percent we're not covering. So can you give us a little instruction there?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think it's useful to think about the way we what programs we look at as far as our obligations to the state, and that the whole point in doing a forecast for an out biennium is to just kind of look at the effect of continuation of current law on both the revenue and spending side, and in particular some of those places in the budget where we make adjustments aside from looking at current appropriations for major portions of the budget in terms of items, not necessarily dollars. We look at the current appropriations as the starting point for going forward in the future. There are a couple of places, Health and Human Services, as you mentioned, and K-12 education, that we make adjustments based on enrollment or caseload or cost of care. And so there are some things, and it's primarily because we look at the statutory responsibility that outlines eligibility or whatnot on a human services program and make some estimate of the number of people and the cost related to that going forward. And so there are some places, and Madam Chair, you ask about the reasons why inflation might be removed. There are those who felt like adding inflation on top of this might be overstating the cost because, in fact, there are some areas in particular the human services area where we look at the cost of care that may be inflated. And I think it falls down roughly on this basis that we have some managed care contracts and some fee-for-service contracts where in some cases rates are set in law, and so we just look at those costs being relatively flat going forward. And then other places where we have to look at the competitive marketplace when we purchase services, and we know that for particular clients in the healthcare area, and we know that the marketplace will have some inflationary pressures there. So there are some things that look like they're inflation, and so included in the forecast. So what we had been doing in the past is adding a discretionary inflation on total expenditures by saying some would suggest that we might be doubling up on inflation in some areas. And like I say, I think it's a portion of the Health and Human Services area that has some cost estimates in place that might be viewed as something akin to inflation.
So, Commissioner, if we if the Senate language does not prevail, what assurances do we have that information on inflation is going to continue to be included in our forecast?
Madam Chair, you have my assurance as I've been the Commissioner of Finance that we've included information about the effect of inflation on expenditures and have tried to make sure that that's clarified in our forecast documents, and we will include placement of that information as part of our forecast documents prominently in the forecast documents. I think, Madam Chair, that there are some things, I think in particular the questions of Representative Solberg about, you know, when we deal with this as part of a budget process, that might be leading to some of the confusion here. But inflation typically has not been included as part of the budget development process. Our starting point in budget development is current appropriations. And so we kind of selectively look at the impact as we've just had this discussion on salaries where we have the expectation that agencies will look for opportunities to absorb those cost increases.
Final thing I'd like to ask you about, Commissioner, is that the legislature and administration, we've all kind of done a lot of little shifting around here of different accounts, and the Senate language would call for us to use generally accepted government accounting practices. It's clearly intended to help us be more diligent and less inclined to do these kinds of shifts. I think an example is we did $800 million of shifts for K-12. So doesn't it make some sense to keep a focus on these budget weaknesses by having the governor's budget recommendation address that kind of issue? And then doesn't that our language on general accounting, generally accepted government accounting practices provide some useful guidance that would assure that we do the responsible thing as we do our budgets?
Madam Chair, I think that especially in the last couple of years, we've talked to people pretty extensively about the difference between our budget statements and our financial statements, where our financial statements reflect generally accepted accounting principles as different from our budget statements that reflect a modified cash basis, the way things are managed in terms of the legislative appropriations in the budget. I think, Madam Chair, that I think it's appropriate for us to call to your attention the difference between these two methods of accounting for things, and in fact, that on the basis of our financial statements and the way that we report that is one of the ways that one of the things that the rating agencies look at when they're evaluating the state finances. Just for consistency and comparison across states. So it's important for us to describe to you where there are differences and to reconcile that, the budgetary statements and the accounting statements, as we do as part of our financial consolidated financial reports. Madam Chair, my concern would be any kind of language that would dictate something that the governor must include as part of his budget recommendations. I think we think it's important for the governor to have flexibility in submitting his budget recommendations to the legislature and not be required to submit things in any particular way. I think that that's different from us reporting to you and pointing out to you the differences between the budget statements and the accounting statements, which we certainly support.
Members, any other questions? Representative Silver.
Madam Chair, both the Senate language that's on R39 and R40, and you're probably familiar with most of it, and it was passed the Senate, I think, very, very early on.
One of our first bills.
One of the first bills, and this is something that I've had an interest in as well, and had a hearing in the House Ways and Means Committee. Didn't get a vote on it, but that's not because they didn't want to vote. I would have liked to have had some kind of a statement from the House. But let me just ask a question for the commissioner, if I may. And I think you need to have this language in front of you, if I could. If we took the Senate language and this year had some kind of a statement that would make a footnote, that would guarantee some kind of a footnote for inflation for the next year, because it's a smaller budget coming in. But the following year, If we adopted something that would be similar to what the Senate has, with some changes that I'd like to have you mark, if you could, on page R39, lines 21-4, get rid of as part of the comprehensive annual financial report, and merely say annually. And then on 4 would say the commissioner shall provide a list of any laws that require the state's general budget not to be reported in accordance with the general accepted funds. And then on the next section, I guess it would be on the next page, if we would, I think it's line... would be line 20, because I've got a different document here. Instead of forecasted programs, for each forecasted programs, if we did that, got rid of for each forecasted programs. So the following year, during the large, big budget year, like right now, 2 years from now, we would have a formal statement that this is inflation. And the question of what kind of inflation and all those things could be addressed. I thought we had a great hearing in the House on that issue. And then there's probably section 12 of the Senate would probably, I would I don't know if these match up or not. No, it does not match up. But your reaction to the Senate language with those changes in it, and then include some language for next year of a formal footnote.
Commissioner, what do you think?
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, if I look at the language first on page R39, this describes currently. Inclusion of this information as part of our financial report, and as I understand, Representative Solberg, you suggest instead of making it part of the annual financial report, where there, I should note that there currently is a reconciliation note in our financial statements reconciling our budget statements and financial statements currently. But Representative Solberg, if I understand what you're saying, you would want some separate annual report to you. And I think, Madam Chair, it's the language that suggests that there are laws that require us not to report in according to generally accepted accounting principles. And I'm not necessarily aware of laws that require us to report things differently. It's just that we prepare budget statements on a modified cash basis. We prepare financial statements on a modified accrual basis. It's not that there's something in law that says, now make sure you don't count something in a certain way. So I think that you know might be the difficulty of the language that's here. As I mentioned, currently our financial statements do a reconciliation of our budget statements and our accounting statements and highlight that difference. And if that's the kind of information that you're looking for, I think that currently is available, Representative Solberg, and available on an annual basis in our financial statements.
Madam Chair, how about the second part then on page 40? I know this is kind of boring stuff, but kind of important for long-term stability, I think, in as we plan. And that would be expenditures projected to occur as a result in deflation or inflation must be stated separately as a note, and then get rid of for each forecasted program. So you don't have a note for each program, but a general note. And the reason I think that that's important is I've sat in, as Commissioner Ingerson has and others, on the Council of Economic Advisors, and the lack of recognizing inflation somewhere along the line, some way, it doesn't come necessarily from me, but they come from people that are a lot smarter than I am. And that's like people like our state economist, and I think even the commissioner recognizes that we have inflation somewhere along the line, and we have to recognize it. Dr. Anton and others have on the council have raised these. So let me just ask your reaction to that particular sentence with that change instead of for each program, to have it as a general statement so we have it, we know what it is. Whether or not we apply it is another thing.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, I think that our preference is not to include any language, to continue the practice that we currently have of reporting inflation as part of our forecast documents. Partly, Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, because there seem to be, even in the Ways and Means Committee discussion as that you referred to of the other day, there seems to be some expectation that people have that somehow including inflation makes it a requirement of spending or a starting point in the spending process, in the whole budget process. And so in order to not build those kinds of expectations in any place, I think that our preference is to continue our current treatment of inflation as noting this and describing it as part of the forecast document, but not having a reference in statute.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we're talking in circles here. If you're going to include it, why wouldn't you say then we can put it in the law to include it? I mean, if you include it, then it's the expectations out there. And I'm just saying include it in the law.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, I think I'm reflecting on some of the discussions that have happened in the last several months about this topic when I say I think that there are different expectations about what it means to include inflation in a forecast. And our preference is to leave the language in the statute as it currently is, but continue to report on the effect of inflation in our documents as we have done.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's what I'm saying in this one as well. But I guess that's a matter of schematics. And Madam Chair, also, you know, other expectations there, I think everybody that's, like I said, a lot smarter than I, to say that inflation doesn't exist, or sometimes even deflation may not be a possibility, is just unrealistic. And quite frankly, if we don't do something, we're going to continue going from crisis to crisis and not have long-term stability in our state government financing.
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
That was a rhetorical question, the first statement, the last time.
I'm sorry, Representative. I actually didn't hear it. So.
It's okay. It wasn't that important.
Well, that's good to know.
I thought it wasn't.
Any other rhetorical questions or questions for the commissioners? Well, thank you very much for being with us. As you know, we struggled with this throughout the session, and it's right to the end of conference committee, so thank you. Representative Seifert, what I would like to do is take about no more than a 10-minute recess. I believe that you told me that Commissioner Ingersoll had some language he wanted me to look at, and there's another issue related to the LCC. I'd like to see Mr. Hubinger for a moment and Ms. Cashman. And so no more than 10 minutes, members. You have a little break, and then we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 amendments. And you saw how fast we got through the other ones. And these are all things that will be, all but one of them, I think, will be familiar to you. Two of them will not be familiar to you, but I think we can move through them quickly. I think we'll have agreement on them. So members will take a 10-minute recess. Conference committee will come to order. Can we get our conferees back at the table, please? All right, members, we have a number of amendments we're going to deal with. The first one deals with the Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force. Does anyone know who won the previous?
What page is that?
It's an amendment coming to you, Senator.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, this has been worked on. This was the amendment that Representative Vanderveer and Senator Kelly worked out, and then we sent them back to the drawing board a couple of times. And I think Representative Seifert will tell us what it does, or do you want the council to do that?
Madam Chair, I think we understand the issue that we want electronic real estate recording to take place. We recognize that there was compromises made all the way through, and that we have more county representation on the task force, which they had asked for originally. We have a setup here. Let's see, and I'm trying to find the
members. I think it's the same amendment you saw before, with the only difference being that the Secretary of State will be the chairman. They're conceding to the Secretary of State being the chairman of the task force.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, are we waiting with the fiscals, or do we want to just take the House position on the money today, or do we want to wait with that?
Let's wait, leave it blank.
Okay.
But we are, with this amendment, moving this appropriation from the LCC to the Secretary of State. And we need a technical amendment, which Mr. Bodron will walk us through. Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, on page 1 of the amendment, lines 8 and 9, deletes Article 3, Section 3, and the comma, and inserts, or actually save the comment, and insert new Minnesota statutes, section 507.094. And that's the law that's establishing the task force here.
Thank you, Mr. Bodron. So, members, this is the agreement that the task force has worked through, or the task force, the work group has worked through. Any questions on the amendments?
Madam Chair, is this language right that... I know Mr. Shepard and I were just talking here that were we sure that the LCC was supposed to operation
part? I'm not sure.
Mr. Bodron.
Madam Chair and members, it is permissive. I'm not certain what the arrangement has been in the past. Presumably the Secretary of State could provide the administrative services, but we may want to clarify that.
So Mr. Bodron would be suggest, well, the issue is, members, why we're confused is, originally this amendment proposed that the LCC provide coordinating and the task force elect its own chair. Now we're making the Secretary of State the chair. The money will go to the Secretary of State. And while we have this permissive language under the Legislative Coordinating Commission, it's probably not needed. So Representative Seifert would move the A45 amendment. I guess Representative Seifert would move to delete the language. Is this correct, Representative Seifert? On page 3, lines 22 through 27. Is that correct? Yep. Representative Seifert moves to, on page 3, lines 22 through 27, deletes that language. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Seifert moves the A45 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Yeah. Amendment is adopted. Next, we will take up a provision that the House had would like to prepare on state mandates. That was we heard as part of Representative Olson's bill, and the House has a proposal for us on what to do.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, the House heard a lot of the concerns Senator Higgins brought forward. We had a very lengthy article on this issue, and so the House is asking for two sentences of language.
That's good editing.
And we're wondering if this is Senator Wergen's bill, if you'd be willing to give that bill a hearing next year to see if there's something that we can glean out of this. And what this basically does is we allow local governments to file a written resolution with the state auditor. We haven't really talked to anybody because we haven't had time. Representative Olson had to go, and we visited about this. And then the auditor would just list the resolutions on the website. And so if we have a pile of resolutions about one issue, that would provoke the second part of Representative Olson's bill, which is not here. But if there's a big outrage about mandates and they're filing a lot of things, we thought it would be good to give Senator Wergen's bill a hearing next year, and I don't have any control over the Senate. And last I checked, you were chair of that committee, and I told Representative Olson I'd ask you. You're a fair person. What do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, when she talked to me about it this year, said there were pieces of that bill she wasn't particularly excited about either, but there were pieces of it that she thought were good. And so, I think that we should give it a shot next year and hear it and see if we can turn it into something. But I think this is a good way to start, so I would move.
Okay.
Does this have a number? 9:18 a.m.
Senator Higgins moves to amend the comparison report with the 9:18 amendment.
Madam Chair?
All those in favor. I'm sorry, Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may, this, of course, does not seem very onerous, but I see that Mr. Sutton is here from the auditor's office, and I'm wondering if perhaps he wanted to make a comment or had a comment at all and extend that courtesy to him.
We should ask the auditor's office.
You didn't do that?
I have been so busy, Senator Higgins, I've been so busy talking to modular home lobbyists the last 3 or 4 days that I haven't had time to see any of the other folks from the agencies or offices.
Representative Secretary, have you bought a home yet?
I just moved, actually, last March. Welcome.
Mr. Sutton.
Yes, Tony Sutton with the State Auditor's Office.
as I've listened to it here today, I don't think that would be very onerous for us to do that, just if they file resolutions with us and we put them on our website. Presumably that would not take any time or effort at all practically. So.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. I think it would be helpful if the auditor can help us focus in on where we can get some opportunities for mandate relief. So thank you, Mr. Sutton. Members, all those in favor of to amend the comparison report with the 918 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next amendment we'll consider is the, we did that one, the voluntary hour reduction. We have language on the Support Our Troops license plates. We have been tracking in our bill funding to come from this to be used for veterans and military affairs programming, and we need the language. So, members, this is the A39 amendment, and I would ask council to walk us through this amendment.
Madam Chair, members, this just establishes, and this is actually in Senator Vickerman's original military support bill on the Senate side. This sets up a new section 168.1298 in Chapter 168 and provides the Commissioner of Public Safety through Department of Vehicle Services the authorization to create the Support Our Troops license plate, and on lines 12 and 13 authorizes a $10 fee, which is the standard fee for license plates like this, and requires on lines 17 and 18 a minimum contribution of $30 to go to the Support Our Troops account that is established in the side-by-side.
Madam Chair, I have just a couple questions. Maybe this group could write the transportation bill now, too. If we got the license plate issue, let's move with it. I can make this work.
I have an amendment upstairs.
We will get our bill vetoed after all. Madam Chair, the serious question I have is the way this mechanism works, that the plates will be paid for out of the money rather than making public safety eat it, or the transportation committee people have been seeing me saying they really want to make sure this is done right, and you know, I haven't showed up
this language. It's my understanding that the recommendation that we've received from our Senate Transportation Council is that in the general transportation bill, it's a bill that is looks like it will get all the way through the process quite successfully. There's a number of special plates, and that it would be less cumbersome to track the expense separately, and there will be adequate revenue to cover these extra plates, these specialty plates for public safety. And Mr. Bodderin has a little bit of additional information that will help us with this.
Madam Chair and members, another way of thinking about it is that this language will certainly capture the money necessary to cover the cost of the plates. It won't appropriate it. This amendment doesn't do that. But it will be available for appropriation. I think it'd be cleaner to take care of that in a transportation bill rather than appropriating money to public safety in this bill.
President Stafford? This is.
I wonder if I should call. Representative Holberg has not been in a very good mood the last couple of days, as you can imagine, with her bill getting vetoed and so forth. So I don't know. I don't know if I should agree to it without
Stafford,
talking.
I would just point out that we can take care of that when we do the riders on Monday.
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, we do.
If you're comfortable fixing it, if she's got a big issue.
Absolutely, we can do it in the riders when we do the financials on Monday.
Okay.
So.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I've worked with the governor and his staff on putting this part of the big package. So I would like to move this, if possible. And
Senator Vickerman, it's fun to see things through to the end, isn't it? Senator Vickerman moves the A39 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next amendment we'll take up is the website language that Senator Higgins has wired through a long discussion. And I think Mr. Shepard has the underline. We have an amendment to...
Was that how you did it, Tom?
The amendment.
Madam Chair, while it's being passed out, we had gotten some comments from the League of Minnesota Cities, who were trying to find out from their members some of the effects of what we were doing, and also from the governor's office, and I can't remember who else came and gave us their 2 cents worth. But this makes a few changes from the piece that we saw the other day. We had originally on page 2, starting on line 8, we said that the publication must, we had originally said that a website or a publication must not include the words "with the compliments of" or "greetings from," that kind of personal or a letter of personal greeting. I spent a fair amount of time looking at other websites and the League of Cities as well. And pretty much everybody's page starts out like "welcome to my website" or something like that. So we revised this to say that a publication must not include the words and leave the website out of that that language. Another piece brought to us from the governor's office is at the bottom of page 2.
Mr. Bodron is just pointing out that this isn't the language that you had sent Mr. Bodron earlier on the bottom of page 2, and he had it drafted as a separate amendment. So you can decide if you want to offer that or if you want to keep...
Well, let's get that passed out.
We'll get that passed
so
out.
We can work from it. That's why I was kind of hesitating as I was going along, because I didn't see...
You realized you would get to that point and be confused because it isn't what you sent him. The issue was that the House Counsel was drafting it, and Mr. Bodron did as an amendment to the draft that we got from House Counsel.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. So there's your language on webcasts and archives that you'd asked for.
Yes. Many of the cities and counties now put their webcasts of their council meetings or their board meetings on their websites and leave the archives of those. So I'm proposing, I guess, that we include this in the list of items for which there is no limitation. And then the starting on line 5 of the second amendment, the shorter amendment, that amends the bottom of page 2 of the bigger amendment, and it says that the state website or publication may include photos or information involving civic or charitable work done by the governor's spouse, providing that they relate to the activities of the functions of the governor. Our first lady has a very nice initiative working with military families, and we didn't in any way want to cut off that kind of activity. So the two pieces together is what I would like to offer, and I'll try to answer any questions if people have them.
Representative Sutter.
Madam Chair, I have one concern which probably could be taken care of with a three-word amendment. That's on page 1, line 16 and 17. On including MNSCU as an executive branch agency, which we tend in a lot of cases not to unless higher ed has been thoroughly consulted, and I'm a little nervous about bringing them into the State Department's bill without talking to Representative Nornes or the MNSCU office folks. They have a lot of websites that they have, including, I mean, I'm just giving an example, the one at Southwest where I work. Because I work in the admission office, I help build the website for the university. And working in admissions, in my recruiting territory, I have an area where there's, you know, things like web blogs and so forth. Now, because I'm a candidate for office under this language, it says on page 2, lines 12 through 17, that, you know, you're not supposed to be able to put things on, or, well, not my site, but when I'm talking to, I'm just trying to think about stuff like that. Are we getting into some things we're not sure about? Because there's, I know Senator Larson, how many MNSCU schools are there if you include the techs and the community colleges? About 40 or something?
Yeah, a little better.
I'm just wondering if we know exactly what we're doing here with all the advertising they do and so forth, if we should exempt them for now and bring them in next year if there's
a
problem.
That's a good idea. let's scratch the Minuscule University.
That's fine.
No. And then I can buy the whole thing. Otherwise, I think the governor's out. If Mr. Nuremberg is comfortable, can we ask him if he's comfortable through a nod of the head?
Who?
Chuck
Nuremberg. Mr. Nuremberg. Certainly.
It's Chuck. He's somewhere.
The representative of the governor's. And Mr. Nuremberg, are you still here?
Well, let's
you must be happy.
All right. So, Madam Chair, that would be on line 16 and 17 of the first page. Delete the last and on 16. Mm-hmm. And everything up to the semicolon on line 17.
Representative Seifert, in response to your invitation to Ms. Nuremberg, we did show him this language. The Senate has reviewed it with him, and we had a brief discussion. The bottom line is, the office of the governor touches every aspect of state government, so it's hard to say that there's any function practically they've not. And I don't think anyone's going to question the work of the first lady on behalf of the governor's office. So I think it's kind of as we talked about the first spouse the other day. I think we're fine. I don't think Mr. Nuremberger had any concerns about it. I don't see him here. So,
Madam Chair. I was just going to ask staff or my members over here if you had any contact. I know you talked with him earlier.
He was here on our break.
Senator Higgins, did he say there's problems at all or that you know of? Mr. Nuremberg, did you talk to him?
I don't know Mr. Nuremberg.
Okay. Did you show it to him?
Yes, Mr. Representative Seifert, we did. Mr. Bodron and I showed him this language. We had a conversation about it. So I think we're fine. I'd be surprised if we're not.
Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins.
I also see one change that needs to be done on the Little Amendment to 8. On line 4, it says Archive of Websites. It should be Archive of Webcasts.
And, Senator, I note that you observed to me earlier that you've now added two words to the, if this is adopted, web logs and webcasts, probably for the first time appear in the state statute. That's your legacy, well, Senator.
That might be it.
Madam Chair,
Representative Seifert.
My counsel needed to get to a repeat of the other incorporated changes that you made, Senator Higgins, so he can get it right in the record. Was it the minuscule? Did you just cross out?
On line 16 of the first page, delete the and. And on line 17, delete everything up. Oh, the comma and, I guess it is, technically. And on line 17, delete up to but not including the semicolon.
Do you have it on the slide? Okay. So members, everyone following, can we move this all in one motion? Everyone's comfortable?
I think everybody's comfortable right now.
Let's adopt this provision, and then if there's any other amendments that Senator Higgins needs to make, we'll consider those. All those in favor of adopting the 82 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 Motion prevails. Representative Seifert needs to be absent for a few minutes. We won't vote, but we will distribute the language on the Council of the Economic Status of Women. Members, as this is being distributed, the House position was different than the Senate position, and this is compromise language that we have worked out, which will preserve the director of the Council of Economic Status of Women, move it to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and require that many of the functions of that office, the studies and reports on matters related to the economic status of women continue, as you can see in this language. It also requires the LCC to study the adequacy of programs and services related to families in Minnesota and to communicate its findings and make recommendations to the legislature on an ongoing basis. The Senate felt that this was a good solution to the challenge presented by the House position because it recognizes the value of having this kind of a researcher and a resource available, and by having it within the Legislative Coordinating Commission, it makes it readily available to the legislature. So the Senate is proposing the A50 amendment, and Mr. Hubinger and Ms. Cashman are here. They're fully informed. Cushman, excuse me, are fully informed of this proposal, and I believe Representative Seifert is prepared to move it.
Madam Chair, I will move it, and the repealer is in on the 3.922, so people know what that is.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Seifert. Members, any questions? I will note for those of you that we have discussed this option, this alternative, with a number of our colleagues, our legislative colleagues, and it's been received very favorably. Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, we talked with council about earlier that the assumption would be that this would be a rider through line 22, that would be a rider, and they'll incorporate that.
And, Council, what changes are needed to do that?
Madam Chair, besides the instruction to convert this to rider form, I think it would be helpful on page 1, line 70 of the amendment, before the commission inserts during the biennium ending June 30th, 2007, comma.
Can Council repeat that?
Madam Chair and members, it would be on line 7 of the amendment, before the words "the commission" insert "during the biennium ending June 30th, 2007," and that just puts this into a writer form, or would assist in doing that.
So you hear the amendment to the amendment.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what happened? The commission member is still appointed by the House and Senate?
The commission is to be appealed.
To be appealed, okay. How much money does that save?
$414,000.
Well, that's not net.
Yeah, that's gross.
That's gross. We'll go over the financials. I'll tell you specifically, because off the top of my head, I don't know. Okay. But the commission was $414,000 a biennium.
Madam Chair, I had a chance to talk to Senator Pappas about this, and she chairs the commission this year, and she said that she thought that this would be okay.
She actually made a special effort to come and find me before we started to say that she thought this was a good solution, and I understand Representative Kahn also thinks it's a good solution, and so we have blessings, I guess,
from
the founding mothers.
Madam Chair, I'll just incorporate that amendment to the amendment into the amendment. We can just vote on
that. So that amendment to the amendment is incorporated. All those in favor of the A50 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative DeForest.
Thank you. I just needed clarification on the repealer. So when is the repealer effective?
Are we looking at different things?
July 1.
Madam Chair and members, that would be July 1st, because this is going to be a budget bill. All items are going to be effective July 1st, unless otherwise stated.
Any other questions, members? Ready to vote?
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The next amendment we will take up is the language on campaign finance reporting, non-campaign. I can't think of what to call that one. It deals with the A47 amendment. Members will be getting it. Representative Solberg had tried very hard to get the Senate to be
Actually, Madam Chair, I got the Senate 99% of them.
I think you got, let's see, there's 67 of us. You got
66.
No, I think you got, I think you got about 59 of us, maybe.
Madam Chair, and quite frankly, to tell you the truth, I worked with Representative Blaine and yourself and others on both sides of the political aisle for this modest change. And I understand some of the concerns. So I don't know if you want me to incorporate some of these changes in to my amendment as I make them, or do you want me to incorporate those changes?
Just, we have a little bit of confusion here. Just a moment, please, Representative Silbert.
I think you have.
Representative Silbert, we evidently have two amendments floating about, and this one wasn't yours.
This one, I think, Madam Chair, is incorporating the changes that were
discussed earlier.
Were discussed. From my first motion and the changes, I think. But can I have a minute to look at it?
Yes, would you like to see the other amendment?
I think I have it here.
We have what you need? And then is Jean Olson in the audience? Ms. Olson, would you please come up? We probably want to verify a couple things with you. And would staff make the amendments available to her, please?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Ms. Olson, on the first page of the amendment, we had this discussion about lines 21 and 22, that during session, we specifically can prepare suggestion, idea cards, surveys, etc. As long as we are not asking someone specifically to vote for us, or we are not asking for a donation. That's your idea, is that has been the case anyway. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Jean Olson, Executive Director of Campaign Finance Board. Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, it's not, I guess I have never used those words, as long as you don't ask for a vote or ask for money. The overriding language is it's a campaign expenditure if it's done for the purpose of influencing your nomination or election. But the board has never had a problem with surveys or opinions, asking for your constituents' opinions.
Which one are we doing?
Madam Chair, so that is subjective rather than objective in terms of at what point does it become, is it the amount of money, is it what the material says? A little of both if it reaches a certain threshold. Because I've had House members come up, and it's not just one, it's many, saying that they want to make sure they're doing the right thing.
Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, yes, I think that there will be no problem. The board has never had a problem with this. In one case, in response to a complaint, the board found that some of the activity was done probably to influence the nomination or election. But I don't have any problem with this language.
Representative Seifert, other questions?
Okay, Madam Chair, so you when you have during session time, we are influencing votes, whether it's an election year or not. We're done by May 21st, 2nd, 3rd, whatever it is. They're supposed to be done, let's put it that way. Would you say then that you could send something out not asking particularly for a vote or asking particularly for contribution or whatnot, but still could be construed as influencing an election, even if it is a survey, depending on how it's worded, or an idea card?
Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, I think those things are done on a case-by-case basis, and generally speaking, there's not a problem with that. I would guess if you did a suggestion card at the end of May or early, middle of May, that may not be something that you could count as a constituent service, because there's not enough time left in the session to deal with your constituents' concerns.
Okay. Madam Chair, would it be better that we put a time frame on that you have to send it out by May 1st or something? Because the members are trying to feel, at what point in time are we unethical and at what point are we public servants asking constituents questions? And I don't know what the magic day is, but I know there are people on both sides of the aisle that are a little concerned if they, you know, for example, right now, if I send an idea card out asking a question about the gas tax, it's a big deal down in Senator Bickerman and I have 6023, that those highways. You know, we're at the end of session, believe it or not, and if I send out a big mailing, let's pretend it's next year. I send out a big mailing in May, you know, we're probably going to go to special session and deal with transportation, I guess. But if I sent out a gigantic mailing on an issue that could be coming up, and it's 2006 and it's May whatever, but I'm just trying to think, should we be more specific or be more, you know, with dates that, you know, if you put a date in saying May 15, if the bill just got vetoed 3 days ago, and that doesn't work either.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
I'm
sure. I think Senator Higgins was... next.
Representative Seifert, this is in the same section as what governs your end of the session reports. Mm-hmm. So it is, according to the way I look at it anyway, it would be perfectly fine as a constituent services until signee die, and then it's half and half. You split the cost half and half up until 60 days after adjournment or whatever this says. But it's that same thing. So it does kind of give you, it doesn't give you a solid date, but it gives you something in reference to a signee die.
Okay. Representative Silver.
That was my point, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. And that, and really, Senator Higgins, it's been, I mean, you've been on this committee for some time, or elections related? Not really. You've done election stuff, I know.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what the practice has been, as Ms. Olson has said?
That's been the practice for our after-the-session wrap-up mm-hmm. reports.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is fine.
Okay.
I would move this, Madam Chair. Looking over, it's probably not as far as many of us are extremely concerned, I think, about the ability to meet with and have a cup of coffee with our constituents and a cookie. But it seems like a cup of coffee and cookie makes us illegal. You know, it's kind of
coffee.
Well, it's kind of strange. One of my good friends is the mayor of Beauvais, or mayor of Nashua, and his wife and my wife are very good friends. And he served on the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors, and it was illegal for him to buy me a cup of coffee. I mean, because they hired a lobbyist. I mean, how stupid can we get sometimes? You know, so, but we're still being a little bit stupid.
One quick question.
Madam
Chair, I have one quick question for the author. Are you the author?
I would move this.
I'm wondering about like the Ed Minnesota dinners where we keep getting in a pinch. Is that that's not taken care of here? Okay, we can pay for it out of campaign funds now.
Not and considered a non-campaign expense. If you look at the language on lines 32 to 33 on first page, it's related to your legislative duties. And
okay. Has Senator Marty signed off on that?
Yes, he has.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just wanted to
make sure. Any other discussion?
I'm fine with it.
One other thing, I think as we look at ethics, you always have to look yourself in the mirror. That's the best ethics you got.
Amen. Good way to think about that.
All those in favor of the 847 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins, excuse me.
I have the A40 amendment. It turns out that Hennepin County has its own ethical practices standard in their section, and this would just bring their section into line with what we just did with the rest of the
So we have a special section of law that deals with Hennepin County's...
all of Hennepin County is in...
All of Hennepin County, yeah.
Okay. It authorizes things like they can have a cafeteria for their employees and all kinds of things that I didn't know anybody had to have in law.
Madam Chair, what's this $50 dinner thing?
Oh, gee, I missed that.
Yeah, you did.
All those in favor of bringing Hennepin County into conformity with our state law, signify by on the A40 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. So here we go. Next, we will take up the amendment on
I have on my list, I think it must be from, I have an elections conformity section that we haven't done, is that correct? Oh, yes, yes, I think that's it. Mr. Watson, is Mr. Watson here? Would you please help us with that, Mr. Watson?
That's the lengthy one.
Well, this is all of the language stuff that we've agreed to, but we finally got it in writing.
Madam Chair, Peter Watson, Senate Counsel. Ms. McKnight and I got together after your last meeting and went...
Excuse me, Mr. Watson, we don't have the amendment yet.
Oh.
I don't believe we do. You have it, but the rest of us?
Didn't anybody else?
Did we not make copies of it?
There was just one... I had one copy I read this afternoon, Madam Chair, and I didn't. I gave it to Senator Higgins to read. I'm sure what
Mr.
it does
Watson.
Is it refers already adopted items, right, Mr. Watson?
Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, yeah. The document that Senator Higgins has is what Ms. McKnight and I put together after your last meeting that represented all the decisions you had already made. It did not reflect any anticipated decisions that you might make. So I don't know that there's any need to vote on that. You just made an amendment or two to that article now, and they can be incorporated into this document, and then you'll be all done with the elections.
Oh,
which
well,
would
great.
Make many of us very happy.
I'll move SGF
Senator, it's all been adopted. So we don't need to do that one. Next, then, we would like to take up the systems billing amendment. Commissioner Ingerson.
I think we're okay, Mark. We should have to drag her back in.
Had asked for.
Ms. Roberts.
And Ms. Roberts will explain it.
Or Mr. Lundeen.
Or Mr. Lundeen. Mr. Lundeen, are you ready?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is language that the Department of Finance has discussed with both myself and Ms. Roberts, and what it's doing is taking both of the language that was contained in the House bill and then taking some of the language that was contained in the Senate bill. So in essence, what it's doing is up to $3 million of the amounts billed to state agencies for the statewide systems account by the Department of Finance will be transferred to the general fund. And this was the item that I went through the long explanation for, and I think I confused Representative Solberg and probably everybody else. But that $3 million nets out to $2 million on the bottom line because $1 million of it is accounted for in the forecast. And then what the language does is it takes the House language allowing the carry forward. So once the $3 million is transferred to the general fund, then they are allowed to carry forward this money to use on the upgrades for their systems.
Oh, you have it, Mr. Byron. We have.
We have copies for you.
I believe so, Mark.
We were just looking for that amendment, so Mr. Shepherd has it. We don't have to send Mr. Bodron back. Okay. We really are not as confused as we appear.
I'm sure I'm fine with this amendment.
So, members, do you understand the systems billing amendments that Mr. Lundeen has explained? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the systems billing amendments be incorporated into the comparison report, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Next, we will take up.
Madam Chair, this is language you and I had talked about related to our fiscals because it's rider language, but it was a lot of things that are kind of done in relation to reporting. We want a little more accountability in the House side. You know, we zeroed out on the radio stuff. So we thought we'd have this with the revisor. If we close on Monday, we'll be able to engross the bill better. Without saying what the number is, of course.
We have had a long discussion about public radio. Not so much here, but Representative Seifert and I have had many conversations about public radio, and I know there's been other conversations that have gone on. And Representative Seifert in the House feels very strongly that if we're going to continue funding public radio, then they would like to have a little bit more what they term as accountability. And so they would like to have this amendment adopted that they must make a list, public a list containing the name and salary of each employee and person providing personal services under contract who's paid more than $100,000 per year. And Mr. Representative Seifert, I had thought you were just looking at employees because it would seem to me that a large enterprise like Public Radio could have a variety of consultants under contract. And I don't know that I'm comfortable with providing personal services under contract. Can you explain to me why we would need that language?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that it's not for every contract if they have people coming in doing whatever work it might be relating to wiring things and cleaning the floors, whatever. It would just be for individuals who are compensated at above $100,000.
What about someone who's been hired to do public relations or a media campaign or a design and information system? Or I mean, there's a lot of personal service contracts, I think, for large major projects. I mean, think about the ones we've done through our information systems. I think some of those contracts are very substantial. So I'm just wondering about, I thought you were really focused more on their permanent employees, and I'm a little bit concerned about that, Representative Seifert. Commissioner Badger is here. Could I just ask you a question, Commissioner, to help me get a sense of this personal? I obviously hadn't seen this language before this moment, so. Representative Seifert, when we define person, it isn't just an individual. It can be any corporation providing personal services. That's why I just thought it would be helpful to have the commissioner who does a lot of contracting help us think about this, because wouldn't it then apply to, you know, you'd end up getting a list of corporations that are providing equipment or information systems or... Am I understanding that correctly from your... Would you understand it that way, Commissioner?
Madam Chair, you're going to get an opinion, and it's only that. I believe the operative word is personal, modifying services. And I believe we would distinguish in the Department of Administration between personal and other kinds of services. Personal would be required to be performed by a single individual, and that individual would be named and could not be substituted for.
Is that Madam Chair?
Senator Larson.
I think, look what happened at the lottery.
A single individual. Madam Chair, that's some concern that if you take government money, who pays the piper calls the tune.
I think that's a good idea.
But Mr. Shepard does have some better language that would clean this up a lot.
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, members, based on what Commissioner Badgerow said, it might, just to reflect that intent, on line 5 of the amendment, if you deleted the word person and inserted single individual, so it would read, the name and salary of each employee and single individual providing personal services. I don't know, Madam Chair, if that helps to make things more clear from your perspective.
And I don't need name per se. I think maybe a position. So it reflects what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
That may mean names.
I'd be better with that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd be fine taking names out and put position. That's
position
what the state. That's what we did with that other piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we have an idea, but we're not naming names per se. And I think that's probably a good idea to clean that up as well.
I would just observe to Senator Larson's very good observation that with the lottery, we really are their board of directors, whereas with Minnesota Public Radio, they receive a relatively small amount of funds compared to their total budget, and they have a separate board, and they have a number of other things, so it's a bit different. I wonder if there's anyone from Public Radio here.
I'm thinking they may be the same with Senator Higgins.
Doesn't look like it's the same group. Senator Higgins, you're fine.
We don't.
You're fine, Senator Higgins. We were looking for someone from Public Radio.
For someone else.
Could
you imagine?
So,
cleans it up a lot.
Members, any discussion? Okay.
I think single individual cleans it up a lot. Okay. I'll incorporate those changes, Mr. Shepherd, read into the record, Madam Chair.
So Senator Representative Seifert incorporates those changes. All those in favor of the 346 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 Motion prevails. Mr. Chairman, we would like to deal with the Amateur Sports Commission next. Do you have an amendment, Mr. Chairman? Or Mr. Representative Seifert?
Here. Here. Madam Chair, we want to hand this out if either for adoption or for discussion purposes. I don't sit on the Amateur Sports Commission. I know that they do some good things, but we've had some concern on both sides about just making sure we have reflection of what was discussed the other night. That if we have the a public or private entity that ends up in the lease situation, that we don't have someone who gets to skate out on property taxes. I think Mr. Erickson would be comfortable with that, but I want to have him come down and just chat with us a little bit. On the back side, we would like him to talk a little bit about the lease revenues. I think he said he told me privately he thought he'd be comfortable with the lease revenue report on the lease land, so we kind of have an idea for accountability purposes what's going on there. And then any proposed leases, let me look on the back side. For review and approval, and I guess I'll just have some comments if you would like to react, Senator Larson, if you'd like to take a look at it and see what you know what you think.
I'm sure I think
Senator Metzen,
Mr. Erickson should come up, and I think that he's okay.
Mr. Erickson, would you?
Madam Chair, also Vice Senator, I have a question too.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'm Paul Erickson, Director of the Amateur Sports Commission. From just reading it now, and I think it reflects the spirit of the discussion from the hearing the other night on taxation, and our intent was to have the parties who lease pay their fair share of property taxes. And I think, Madam Chair, my chairman and I had recommended to you the idea of providing a report in January, and so we're very comfortable with that, and I think it would promote good awareness on the status of the program.
Madam Chair, just
the
I'm sure while he's reading the last part, can I intercede something on the last section that I have a concern with? Let's draft it. Two things on page 2, line 23. When you have the legislative review and approval, two things. Do we submit a bill to approve it? And do we also have a problem with separation of powers?
Well, Representative Solberg, I noticed that language, and I think during the interim it might be difficult to, if you have a situation where you have a lease coming up, I don't know how that would work. We do have a commission with legislators on it, but...
I think we have to, I was going to point that out, I think Representative Solberg and Representative Seifert are right. We're not going to be back here until February or March, and they've got to get...
March, Senator Larson. You want to wrap the bill up, it's got to be March.
But anyway, it's going to take some time from and to come back with leases and let the...
I have a suggestion, Senator. I've seen this done in other committees where they submit for approval to the chairs of standing committees. So it could be, you know, for instance, I had on that land sale that we were talking about earlier, it is subject to the approval of the chairman of the finance committee, so that the land sale had to go through that review and he had to sign off on. It was the land transfer he had to sign off on. So you could do that to chairman of Ways and Means, chairman of finance, you could do it that way.
Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, Mr. Shepherd has some issues on separation of powers and some constitutional issues if he wants to comment. But
Mr. Shepherd.
I don't know that I don't know that we're able to have a legislator veto or approve.
That's right.
But
right.
Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I think the way it's written, this is constitutional as written, because the entire legislature would have to approve it, and it would have to be signed by the governor, presumably. It would just be a bill. So I think the way it's written is fine. I think there was some discussion a few minutes ago of possible approval by single legislators or single committees, and I think that would be problematic if it were challenged.
But
Mr. Shepherd, I'm trying to recall, and as we try to look at this, I know with that land transfer, it became an issue actually to get to track down Senator Cohen and get him to sign it. But there are some other ways that there are reports back to standing chairs or standing committees, to the chairs of standing committees. Is there another way that we could approach this so that the legislature feels that it knows what leases are being entered into? Because there's not a direct, Mr. Erickson, I think this is the only committee that provides direct oversight at all, right? I mean, we don't really provide any oversight, but we're the only one that you interact with regularly?
Yes.
Other than the bonding committee?
Yeah. Madam Chair, the State Government Finance is the committee that reviews all of our appropriations. I just looking at this for the first time, the leases for this program could occur over a 6, 7, 8 month period, because there might be 6 or 7 different parties. This would make it, you know, very impractical. I recall that the Amateur Sports Commission in the past has had some reporting and updating the chairs of State Government Finance, but I don't think we've ever had, because we have a 16-member board appointed by the governor and the legislators that have the authority to approve leases in current law, that I think the agency, and we have 2 board members at the conference committee table, but I think they would prefer a appropriate reporting mechanism. But the timing of when the legislature meets and when individual committees meet would almost render the lease provision impractical.
I think Representative Seifert has a suggested amendment.
Madam Chair, I think it might work better to say something like, the commission must submit proposed leases for the land described within this section to the chairs of State Government Finance for review before the leases may be entered into by the commission at least 30 days before the lease, Mr. Shepherd.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Seifert, I suggest that the at least 30 days be moved up in the sentence a bit, perhaps before the word before.
Mr. Shepherd, would you read it again, please?
Let Mr. Shepherd maybe do that
one. Let me try this out, Madam Chair. The commission must submit proposed leases for the land described within this section to the chair of the House State Government Finance Committee and the Senate State Government Budget Division for review at least 30 days before the leases may be entered into by the commission.
And we'll take the approval out. And
okay.
I don't know why we need this information or this in there at all, because, you know, these people are going to be developing that area, and it just seems to me we've got 4 legislators on the commission that are going to be reviewing them and approving them. So I don't know why you have to have this language in there.
Well, Representative Seifert, I think...
Madam Chair, I'm open to whatever this group decides. It's just an idea we're throwing out.
I'd just like to move that we delete that language.
Senator Larson, I encourage you not to delete that language.
Ma'am.
I think that there's been some issues this year that having this kind of review... Having the opportunity for more frequent conversation with the legislatures will help the Amateur Sports Commission. I think Mr. Erickson would probably agree with me on that could be a good thing to do for the next couple of years.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Erickson?
In deference to my board members, I think... the Amateur Sports Commission would be well served by having some additional reporting to the chair of the State Government Finance Committee, because I think we have a good story to tell. It's a good measure, and it's good to have this good information to you so that you can help advise us
on its direction.
And the language that was just read, do you think that will be workable, Mr. Erickson?
Madam Chair, from a staff perspective, amateur sports mentioned yes, but I refer to my board members.
Madam Chair?
Representative Silver.
Might I make a suggestion for at least the last part, which seems to be the controversial part, and as you go through this leases, there's going to be a time frame for the leases, and then there may not ever be a lease again, that at least there be some sunset provisions on that if they're planning to do things within the next couple of years, that as they develop the first lease, I think is what's important to have some kind of review on. And I don't have any magic number, but I'm just suggesting that as that we sunset that last part or within some time frame.
But won't it automatically sunset when all the leases are let? I mean, when all the whole project is developed, then it'll automatically sunset.
I guess maybe there would be a good time to have a repealer then after they're all leased up. that's possible.
I'm sorry, I missed the last
part. That's possible as well. Then maybe then a repealer when they're all leased, get rid of it.
Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I think maybe a piece of this should wait until we do the fiscals on Monday. And on page one, the appropriation being one time, I think that conversation should be held when we do the financials.
Okay.
That's just... So I want the group to be fully informed on what's all on the amendment, and that's a pretty significant change. What do members think of that? That we should have that conversation on Monday?
I think that would be appropriate.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Are we okay with that, to drop that out?
Yep.
So we would be on the A81 amendment, you would be deleting lines 3 through 5.
Yeah, I think we should, Madam Chair, in fairness to the budget process, we're gonna do. You said we'd do all our budgeting on Monday, and... that way we'd be able to review everything and say, should we have it ongoing forever? Should we have it one time? Should we sunset? Should we do the full Monty on funding, whatever? But I think depending on what our target is, it's going to have a lot of impact on what we do. And I want to treat everybody fairly here. So, Mr. Erickson, do you think that sounds fair? Why would you say no? Senator Larson, you think that sounds fair?
Yeah, let's talk
okay.
About it.
Okay, let's talk about it on preferably Monday.
Monday, yeah.
Okay. Representative Seifert moves the A81 amendment as amended.
Yep.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We have a request by the Senate to take up the issue of modular homes, which is manufactured homes, licensure, and modular homes on page
R-165.
Now, we realize that the House has not heard this bill, and we realize that there was some controversy expressed over the Senate petition. However, I will say that the Senate's enthusiasm for this provision has only grown over the course of this conference committee, particularly for my good friend Senator Vickerman and my good friend Senator Larson, who really feel that this is something that would really protect consumers. And I should let Senator Vickerman speak for himself, because he has spoken to me frequently about this. So, Senator Vickerman, I don't know if you wish to say something. I know you were surprised that some of our House members were not prepared to accept this. And I'd offer either Senator Vickerman, Senator Larson, Senator Higgins an opportunity to try and persuade the House members that this is something that we would really like them to do. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair and members of the conference committee, I look at this as somewhat of a rural bill, but these homes are built in rural Minnesota. I received a phone call and letter from three of them in my district, Redwood, Worthington, Tracy. Representative Seifert has a large one in Marshall, and I don't know if he's been contacted or not. I was going to carry this bill myself, and I have so much to do with veterans and gaming that I decided to let Senator Sparks carry the bill. Senator Sparks has moved the bill along. I see no harm in accepting our part, and I know there was some question from the gentleman from Pennsylvania, but I'm more concerned about Minnesota than I am about Pennsylvania. And they are, if you ever get a chance, come down to Worthington and you should see them. They're not a trailer house. They're big, fancy homes. I mean, they're top-notch homes, and they're not cheap either. And they move a lot of them around in that area, and I believe that, Senator Larson, you also have a couple close to you up in your area.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, when you look at this issue, there are about 3,000 new homes built each year, and they employ about 3,500 workers, and there's about 1,500 small businesses involved in this. It has the support of the Minnesota Department of Administration, and we do license the dealers themselves, but we do not license the salespeople. And I think what we have here is it's criminal background checks on the applicants who are selling. They require some continuing education of 10 hours over 2 years. So I think, as Senator Bickerman has said, there are a lot of dealers out there in greater Minnesota. And when we look at the housing issues in greater Minnesota and the need for housing, this is a wonderful way for people to get into their first home. And I think this is a pretty important bill, I think, for housing in greater Minnesota.
We'll just observe to the members of the House that if you go to buy a regular house, you go to a realtor. That realtor is regulated quite extensively by the state of Minnesota, and we occasionally go in and revise those licensure requirements to make sure that they are fully representing. We have the interests of the buyer and the seller, and we make sure that they tell us if they're representing the buyer or the seller. We also have a lot of requirements that they go through, detailed information about the house that you're about to buy. When you go to get your mortgage, we have many disclosures that are required to be signed. With manufactured homes and modular homes, as we heard in testimony here, sometimes costing in the hundreds of thousands, we have very, very little regulation. And so people are making very substantial investments. Even though they're hiring a contractor to assemble them, if it's a modular home, which we heard the other day, they're making big investments. And we used to have jokes about aluminum siding salesmen, we also have jokes about the opportunity whenever there's an opportunity to sell a product at a high price. There sometimes are those who are opportunistic. So the Senate position is one that we need to protect consumers by making sure that those who are selling something of such high value and yet such importance of personal security for families. I mean, what's more important to you than the purchase of your home? Where do you stand a greater loss, or where do you put most of your money as to your mortgage, whether it's to a manufactured home or a stick-built home? That's where most of your money goes. And so the Senate position would be that we really should be doing what we can to provide adequate consumer protection. So the Senate would ask, since Senator Bickerman would like to make a motion,
and Senator Larson,
to move Article 7 of our comparison report, and we would like to have a roll call vote.
We're fully informed and ready to vote, Madam Chair.
Who will take the roll? I guess it's our turn. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Blaine.
No.
Representative De La Forest.
No.
Senator Higgins.
Yes.
Representative Hilty.
No.
Senator Larson.
Yes.
Senator Metzen. Representative Solberg.
Yes.
Senator Bickerman.
Yes.
Representative Seifert.
Yes.
Senator Kiskaden.
Yes.
We need three on each side.
We need three on each side. The motion does not prevail.
No.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins, you have an amendment to offer?
I do. The other day when we were adopting the travel policy language, and we had passed this language, and then I spoke with Mr. Sulem from the township, and he asked if we could make one change that could actually bring the townships in compliance with this law, and we're having the language passed out on line 17. The word updated be changed to reviewed, and I think it's here he could explain how this could help the townships abide by this law.
Before he comes forward, Representative Seifert, did you wish to speak?
Madam Chair, I did talk with him, and actually we had talked about just deleting the townships. Are the House members comfortable in just taking that out? So we'll just, Senator Higgins, would you just incorporate that on line 6 to cross out, is it town? Is that the statute or definition of a township? To just delete town, and then we're fine with the rest of it.
Sure, you're okay if they all go on wild, crazy trips?
I know how frugal they are, Madam Chair. I think we'll be okay.
That'd be fine.
Okay, thank you. I'll move that, Madam Chair.
Representative Seifert moves to amend the A33 amendment. We need to have an amendment motion first to reconsider.
Are you incorporating?
Representative Seifert
moved on the or voted on the prevailing side. I move that we reconsider the A33 amendments as we adopted a couple of days ago.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Seifert moves to amend the A33 amendment on line 6, delete the word town, and adopt the rest of the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No. I think weren't we going to change the word updated to reviewed on line 17 as well?
I'm sorry, I thought that was only if we had town in it. So... Excuse me?
Madam Chair.
Reviews would be better than updated.
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's what we get first in the most. Representative Seifert, I'm very grateful. But with the discussion have been just for clarification purpose, the word updated, changing to review, was... If there are no changes to be made, update requires action, and that's why review would be required. And just because my colleagues from the school districts are unable to be here, this language was concerned to them as well. That's why the word updated to review would be better. And then there also had been discussion about on line 15 of the amendment, the total amount of funding available is something that's done in budget, not by policy. And so we could end up with some technical glitches for auditing purposes if we have to lock in a policy that which is better dealt with in the budgeting process. So what our discussion had been was to delete line 15 and change updated to reviewed. Yeah. I just bring that up here to your clarification purposes.
Madam Chair, I'm fine deleting line 15. We talked about that. Senator Higgins, okay incorporating that?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Ready to roll.
Chair, do we have then three different changes in this?
Mr. Bodden, would you review the changes, please?
Madam Chair, members, what I have so far is on page 1, line 6 of the amendment, delete town, comma, and on line, just delete line 15, and on line 17, delete updated, and staff can make the necessary changes, the other technical changes.
And insert reviewed?
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry, and insert reviewed.
Representative Silver?
Yeah, that's fine.
Members? All those in favor of the A33 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins?
When we were adopting elections items, we had a discussion about... whether the absentee ballot can just go inside another envelope or whether there had to be a second security flap. And we originally just added and envelope or something in the language. And Ms. McKnight was kind enough to look at that with a fresh eye and realized that it had it needed a little wordsmithing. And so the A, oh, let's see, what's it called? COM 7 amendment is something that corresponds to her work on that.
Members, I believe that's been distributed to everyone. Is
yes.
that correct?
I reviewed it, Madam Chair, and it's what Ms. McKnight and I talked about.
Senator Higgins moves the COM 7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments, members? Are there any other amendments? There's like three calls. Right? Are there any other amendments? Last call. Well, members, we continue to work. We are very close. To just get that right target, we'll be all done. I hope you all have a very pleasant Sunday. I hope the sun shines. And we will try to have a conference committee on Monday, no later than 10:30 a.m.
10:30, or do you want to just a little earlier, do you think?
I think, Representative Seifert, I'd like to go earlier, but I think it's not likely that we will be able to go earlier than 10:30.
No, that's fine. I was wondering if we should go later than 10:30, but the reviser tells me we're cutting it a little close if we go much later than that.
We are not going to probably be able to just... We have not adopted all of the first section with all the riders, although that will go very quickly. So we will have a little work to do. What? So let's make a 10:30 or at the call of the chair, which hopefully may be a little bit earlier.
Okay.
And we'll try and find a room, ask staff to find a room at the Capitol, and members, we may have to miss a little bit of session or a little bit of caucus. So with that, the meeting is adjourned, and I wish you a very pleasant Sunday.